This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, I'm here with Mark Story, the Director of New Media at the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've heard a lot of good things about you, believe it or not. And what Mark has been involved in has been a cutting edge, maybe a bleeding edge program, where he is he's using social media at the SEC. And what I thought, we'd bring him in and find out all his horror stories and where he's failed. And before we began, I said the pioneers always get the arrows, and I'm sure Mark's got a lot of arrows. And so maybe my listeners can take notes, and if their boss, if their CIO, if the people who are running their agency are pushing them into social networking, maybe they can gather some tips and suggestions on what to do and what not to do. But before we begin, let's paint the picture here. Tell us about your background, Mark, and how you wound up where you went to college and how you wound up working for the SEC.
Oh, my, it's a long story.
This is only a half-hour show. Give us 30 seconds.
Yeah, and thank you for not making a pun on my last name when I talk about a long story. Graduated of the University of Maryland undergrad. I went on to get an MBA. I think I started out in Washington as the lowest of the low, which was a cold caller for a temporary agency. And kind of worked my way up and discovered that there was something besides sales, and it was called marketing. So went on to do an MBA. Got into marketing roles and then marketing for high-tech companies, and then kind of crossed over into the world of doing public relations online and using the internet to kind of influence people. And it used to be called internet work, and now it's more along the lines of online reputation management. So a couple of stops in global PR firms, and about 2.5 years ago, I landed at the SEC.
Interesting that you know, back when I was in college during the Civil War, you'd never think of a government agency having a person just to handle new media. I mean, but if you look at the last 10 years, it's been bombarded with so many things. I mean, how can you keep up? You read the news releases, you read this, read that, you turn on the computer, you find out all of a sudden Facebook is changing their policy. Now they're doing this thing called Places, which if you're working for a federal agency and you're allowing your people to use Facebook, now you may have to change your policy. But before we begin, let me talk about something that I found fascinating about you, Mark. We exchanged emails, and I looked at your SIG file, and I said, well, geez, look at this guy's SIG file. He works for the SEC. He's got these sites here. He's got investor.gov on his SIG file. He's got twitter.com. He's got a special mobile site. He's got YouTube. I mean, the SEC is out in the bleeding edge for this whole social networking, isn't it?
A little bit on the bleeding edge, I think, especially for government. And, you know, I saw your note about new media, and it's social media is probably a little bit of a better term for this, because what's new in the internet changes all the time. So, I mean, just a couple of examples. Believe it or not, Twitter did not exist 4 years ago.
Yeah, I can't believe it. You know, it's like saying, well, the state of Illinois didn't exist 4 years ago. You know,
yep.
500 million users.
Yep. But get this, 4 billion tweets have been posted.
Whew.
4 billion tweets, about 65 million tweets are posted every single day. And I actually did the math on that, and that's 750 tweets per second.
Wow. You know, my wife just drove my son off to college, and I said, how are you going to keep in touch with him? Oh, I set up a Twitter account. Then we went back and forth in a Twitter account in case he needs something or we want to find out what's going on. It's just, it's 2 years ago when he went off the tech, we didn't even think about that. You know, mm-hmm. We gave him a cell phone. Cell phone, come on.
Yep, that's cell phone is old school, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of listeners who are federal IT professionals, and they're getting pushed in this area of social networking, maybe setting up special sites, Twitter, YouTube. Tell me about the site you were responsible for, had a lot of input in this, investor.gov.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, microsites. There are thousands and thousands of pages of information on SEC.gov. We represent a variety of constituencies, but you could argue that everyone in the United States, as you said, with $10, could have a stake in the markets. protecting investors is one of the principal missions of the SEC. So what we decided to do was to say, you know, we've got a lot of really good investor information on SEC.gov. Why don't we break that out into a site specifically for investors? And that's when we came up with the idea for investor.gov. So the information that we provide on that site is targeted toward a phase of life. For example, are you getting started in investing? Are you part of the sandwich generation? Meaning, are you saving for kids' college or maybe trying to help your parents retire too?
Or both.
Or are you a senior who's looking to make wise investment choices? And by having the microsite, if you're an investor, pretty much in almost every life cycle in your life, you can go onto the site, you can get information that's relevant for you. And sometimes the big SEC site can be a little bit daunting.
Another reason I brought you in here is because I've had generals and all kinds of military folks on the studio here. We talked about social networking, and they always say, no, John, you understand, we're real special. We have to be very, very careful about what information we release. But the SEC, it has the same type of boundaries, that they have to be very, very careful about the information they release. Yet, you're leaders in social networking. So I can go back to the Pentagon and go, hey, guys, they're doing it at the SEC with very sensitive information and very strict rules about what you can say, what you can't say, aren't there?
Precisely. The SEC, we regulate publicly traded companies, or many publicly traded companies. So we, in essence, write regulations that list when companies can say things, how they can say it, where they can say it. So we have to be especially careful ourselves.
Whoa.
Yeah. Now, the fact that we're careful doesn't mean we can't do it. It doesn't mean we can't engage in a conversation. So finding out between the communications people, the IT people, and the lawyers, finding out where that sweet spot is, I think, is a real specialty. And important as well.
You know, over at the Department of State 10, 15 years ago, when they wrote a letter, it had to be reviewed 50 times, every semicolon, every period. Capitalization was very, very careful because it was a very important document. Now, with this instantaneous communication like Twitter, and I see Twitter's got, you've got a SEC news at Twitter, the Twitter feed there. Is it some constraints on what can be communicated, what can't be communicated? Very, very careful. Or is there a workflow with an approval process?
No, because we actually set up the approval process in advance, and it's pretty straightforward at the SEC. Anything that the chairman and the commissioner say is not covered under a release policy or under an ethics policy. So if Chairman Shapiro says something or one of the commissioners say something, we can put it up on Twitter instantly. It's not unusual for me to be in an SEC open meeting with my laptop, kind of in a burst of 140 characters, doing things that or posting things that the chairman and commissioner say, and then providing a link to, for example, the live webcast in the meeting.
We've just talked about their Twitter feed, investor.gov. Take a quick break. We come back, talk more about the mobile situation you have, msec.gov. And I have to tell you the truth. You know, the SEC, I think this big building with all these formal people. No, just go to the YouTube and find out what's going on at the SEC. So there, it's kind of an incongruity here for someone my age. It goes, yeah, SEC's got a YouTube feed. It seems kind of strange. We'll get back to more of that. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Mark Story, Director of New Media at the SEC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio here, we have Mark Story, Director of New Media at the Securities and Exchange Commission. Before the break, we talked about investor.gov and your initiative in that area there. And I kind of touched on Twitter and handheld devices and YouTube. Now, for the benefit of my listeners, okay, let's say one of my listeners is working for an agency and they're getting pushed to set up these Twitter feeds and maybe YouTube. And let's find out from your experience what the best practices are. What are the mistakes you made? And then what maybe some of my listeners can take away from some of your failings or successes. Talk about your failures here, Mark.
Yeah, well.
Let's start off with Twitter.
Twitter. Believe it or not, before you even think about the technology, you have to take a step back. And if you are in a federal agency and you're the one who owns the role of introducing social media.
Some of my listeners are in that position.
Yep. Think of yourself as first doing three roles before you even get into technology. You have to be part psychiatrist, part subject matter expert, and part researcher.
What about TCP/IP and security and firewalls and .NET and all that, huh? Not important.
No, it's not that it's not important, but before you do any of this, now it's psychiatrist, I think, because you have to understand people's fears and work around them, because social media is new, and I think anything that's new can scare people. Subject matter expert is you really have to have an understanding of how social media can fit in for your government agency. And finally, researcher, because if you're going to go to lawyers in your federal agency, and they have a lot of power in the agencies, probably that your listeners have, understand what the legal precedents are. If you're in a federal agency and you go to the lawyers, you can say, well, this other agency did it. I talked to the legal person. Here are the constraints. Here are some of the issues that they overcame. Here are some of the challenges that they had. So you do your homework for the legals within the agency. And in fact, it's like a lawyer presenting a case. Here's the precedent. Here's my case. And here's why you should approve it.
Great. That's right down the list here. Handheld devices. I'm sure my listeners may be getting pushed into providing information under handheld devices. A lot easier than the Twitter account, or what kind of guidelines for that?
Yes, it's a lot easier. A lot of the mobile sites actually work off of RSS feeds. Our website works off of RSS feeds. There are some very, very inexpensive services out there that will take your RSS feed, put it onto a mobile device for you for a reasonable cost. You don't have to be a technical genius to do it. And it's actually not at all hard to get it approved, because anything that appears on your website that is being disseminated via an RSS feed can go on a mobile site.
So it's the same rules, the same...
Same rules, same everything. And the beauty of the mobile site is that if you're a soccer mom getting an investor bulletin, or if you were on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange getting information about an administrative proceeding or a litigation release, there's something for you in your handheld device. It's easy to do. It's cost-effective. And I think in terms of social media, it's really the low-hanging fruit.
So Twitter's kind of tricky, making a mobile site a little bit easier. Now, what about YouTube? I think that's very, very difficult to come up with compelling content for YouTube.
Yeah, the compelling content, I think, is in the eye of the beholder. If you are a securities lawyer, you probably have a bookmark to our YouTube site. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really in the eye of the beholder. But stop and think about this. There are about 150 million videos on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, 150 million. So if you wanted to start watching every single video on YouTube, beginning to end,
rest of your life,
600 years.
Well, that's a long life.
Yeah, I don't know if you have that time, John. I unfortunately don't.
Yeah.
But it's really more of a fundamental question of, do you choose to be part of the YouTube? Do you choose to be part of the YouTube community? Take things in a very, very easy format and put them up so people can watch them. And by the way, as government employees, we also close caption the videos so you can see them, you can read them, and it's a really good way to produce information out there. And 200,000 videos get put on YouTube per day.
Just incredible. Yeah, I was looking at some of the SEC videos on there, and I think it's just it's an obligation that all the agencies have to at least consider it. And I think some of your experiences, do you track the people who watch your videos, or is that a concern to you?
We can look up how many times our videos get viewed, but there are some pretty strict privacy constraints in terms of the information that we can gather. In the private sector, it's great to gather information because you can hone your videos, you can determine who's watching them, how popular they are, but we're pretty constrained in the federal government.
Let's take this topic of constraint and toss around a little bit here. Washington, D.C., home of a lot of associations. There's one called FINRA, F-I-N-R-A, they're right downtown. The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. That sounds pretty impressive. I think they just changed their name in the last few years. But so FINRA has very specific recommendations for their people to do social networking. So do you work with FINRA? Are you competitors? Or what's your relationship with FINRA?
FINRA is what we call an SRO. It's a self-regulated organization. We are kind of sister organizations in that whom they regulate and whom we regulate is determined upon how much the asset manager or the organization has in total investments. So it's a little bit hard to figure out where the SEC leaves off and where FINRA picks up. I'm familiar with what you're talking about, and FINRA issued some really terrific guidelines that said, this is the individual platform. This is Twitter. This is Facebook. This is what you can do on it. This is what's permissible, and this is what is not permissible.
Because the public relations people for companies out there have to be very careful about forward-looking statements and putting anything on Twitter that may be interpreted as being a forward-looking statement. So they have to be very careful. So there's constraints there. So just because you work for the federal government doesn't mean you're the only person in the world with constraints, because the people out there in the commercial world have constraints just as well, huh?
Yep, precisely. And if you're, let's say, a broker-dealer, an investment advisor, what you can say and the advice that you can offer is regulated. And that's important to do because a core mission of the SEC is investor protection. And quite often the point of contact with investors is a broker-dealer or an investment advisor. So both FINRA and the SEC watch very closely and offer pretty specific guidelines in terms of the information that you can provide to investors.
So social networking applies to multi-billion dollar companies and forward-looking statements. It also applies to college football players. You know, University of Maryland's got football players over there. And guess what the latest thing is now? Some coaches are deciding whether or not the Terrapins can sit on the bench and tweet during a game.
Precisely.
Can Twitter during a game. I mean, so, you know, what's happening is as this Twitter, as this social network is getting more and more mature, all of a sudden people are saying, now, wait a minute, you can't Twitter in the middle of a game.
Yep, that's really, and if you consider again that 65 million tweets get added every single day, somebody's got to be watching the ones that are important. Now, as a graduate of the University of Maryland, I hope that they tweet lots of stuff about great recruits and things like that.
But you don't know what is going on there. And I think that would, I mean, if I saw someone on the bench behind me tweeting, I'd like to know, get your head in the game, boy. I mean that's probably something that I would say that may not be the best thing in the world to say. If you Google social networking, you find articles, The 7 Deadly Sins of Social Networking. Kind of an interesting concept there. When we get back, maybe talk about some of the regulations of social networking, some of the deadly sins, and maybe some of the future of social networking for federal agencies like many of my listeners here. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Mark Story, Director of New Media at the Securities and Exchange Commission.
In Depth with Francis Rose, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Want to know how Congress is affecting your agency's staffing and budget? Want to learn more about the relationship between your agency and its contractors? In Depth helps you become a better manager by exploring the best ways to manage projects, manage your workforce, and manage yourself. In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Mark Story, Director of New Media at the SEC. Well, the previous segments we've bounced around from investor.gov to Twitter and to some mobile devices and YouTube talk about social networking. Now let's go back and talk about just this human concept here of, okay, you're working for an agency and someone suggests that you start a Twitter feed for your bureau, your agency, or some program. Well, what's the first step is here? Can I do it? Is that the first step, Mark, or...
No, I would suggest something a little bit different. Just adding one word to that sentence is important. So rather than asking, can you do it, I would recommend that people ask, how can I do it? Because when you really think about it, in the federal government or in the private sector, there's going to be three different constituencies. You're going to have the communications people, you're going to have legal, and you're going to have the IT people. So sometimes it's a breeding ground for a turf war. So rather than asking people, can we do this, and getting three different constituencies to agree, make them part of the process and say, how can we do this together? And that really goes a long way toward getting something like Twitter or YouTube launched.
So let's give a specific example. Over at the USDA, they're doing some accrediting of veterinarians, and they have 60,000 applications there. And so one way to communicate to these applicants might be to set up a Twitter feed. If you're working for the agency and someone says, we want more transparency, more communication with citizens, one way to do this is with a Twitter feed. And by following your example, actually going to the Twitter feed and looking at your Twitter feeds, you can find out how to do this, the three-step process.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. Even what's a little bit surprising, and it wasn't listed in my signature line, but we have a jobs feed. Because as your listeners might know, the SEC is doing a lot of hiring lately. So we take our positions off kind of an antiquated government system. We list them on Twitter. If you can follow it and you're interested in an SEC job, you can put in the application right there.
And I think every agency, one of the challenges is finding good people. And if you rely on old ways, which would be, I guess, advertisements in the Sunday Washington Post, the way I used to buy cars, I mean, no one does that anymore. And I guess, how are you going to find Generation Y people with skill set for your agency? We can do that by setting up a Twitter account. And then go back to your principle of, well, can we set up a Twitter account? Well, that's not the right question, is it?
Yep. How can we set up a Twitter account? And it's interesting that you mentioned Gen Y. Gen Y kind of being the, in some ways, the children of baby boomers. Gen Y is 96% of Gen Y people are on social networks. So if you're talking about the baby boomers eventually retiring and being replaced by younger people, the Gen Y people are both consumers and producers of content. So our challenge in government agencies is also taking that into account. If we're attracting people to work at the SEC, or if we're trying to provide information for people, the way that people receive information has changed and is continuing to change.
I have a friend whose son just took a job at the Federal Aviation Authority, FAA, because he's a pilot, and he thought his programming skills could help other pilots, so he took a job there. And but how would you attract someone like that? You know, you can't attract them in the traditional manner, but maybe you can use social networking, whether it's with a Twitter feed or with a mobile feed, to let people know some of the challenges your agency has and how their skill set might be able to move their agenda forward.
Precisely. Be where they are. If they're on Twitter, if they're on Facebook, if they're on YouTube, make sure your information is where they have a trust network. They have a place where they go. They trust the people on there. Put it there, and then they'll eventually come back to where you are.
Well, I'm going to use a four-letter word on the radio, so this may be dumped out, but the four-letter word is blog, B-L-O-G. And we haven't talked about blogs whatever. I guess it's a whole different category of social networking, but haven't talked about it. Where's blogs fit in this whole package here?
Blogs, many government agencies do in fact have a blog, and I think the best example that comes to mind is the State Department. And they have something that is unfortunately entitled DipNote.
Mm-hmm.
Within that blog, they have almost unfiltered comments. And if you consider that that's pretty much the blogosphere voice for foreign policy of what some people call the world's only superpower, there's a lot that goes on there.
Well, people who are listening to this are jumping up and down and going, whoa, 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 unfiltered. Wow, that's real risky, isn't it?
Yep. I had spoken to someone in the recent past about that, and I said, well, what do you do when you get extremely derogatory comments on there that criticize the United States or that criticize the foreign policy of the United States, and they leave it up? Somebody comes in behind there when somebody has an extremely derogatory or not factual thing to say, and people correct it. And then the conversation goes from kind of the one-way blog post to a dialogue amongst the people who read the blog post. So if you consider that a lot of blog posts are kind of self-correcting and you end up with a digital democracy of people kind of saying, okay, we'll agree to disagree or this is the end point, I think that blogs definitely have a place in the federal workforce.
Although interesting that I almost see a move away from blogs. Just, I mean, as 4 years ago it was cutting edge, I see the move away from blogs and into more quick, immediate feedback like Twitter.
Mm-hmm. That's true, but sometimes people still want more detailed information. And we won't get into a whole discussion here about is print media dead or are blogs hot? But there's definitely a place for blogs. People can get a quick tweet or maybe click through if they want to, but sometimes they want to read more. And more importantly, they want to read the comments. They want to hear what people have to say or maybe even comment themselves. So I think there is definitely a place for blogs in terms of collecting and disseminating information.
We've run out of time here. We've had a wide-ranging discussion of social media for federal agencies. I'm sure you folks can bookmark this and come back and listen to what Mark had to say. Love to have you on 6-7 months here and find out how things have changed. I'd like to learn more about your Twitter feeds and different ones you set up for different topics. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Mark Story, Director of New Media at the SEC. Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
The Government Printing Office recently awarded a contract to move away from a 30-year-old mainframe computer system. Mike Wash is GPO's Chief Information Officer. He describes how the new system will work.
You're working with a company that can emulate the environment that we have with our mainframe and then move our applications that are currently residing on our mainframe into their hosted environment where it's essentially a virtual GPO mainframe.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract and next time make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation. You can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
And our special guest today is Mike Wash, the Government Printing Office Chief Information Officer. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with some basics. I think GPO's mission is pretty straightforward. People understand it. Oh, you guys have been around for, I think you just celebrated your 200th anniversary?
No, it's the beginning of our 150th anniversary. On June 23rd was the 150th anniversary of the joint resolution that was signed by President Buchanan that was the beginning of the creation of the Government Printing Office.
So I aged you guys a little bit. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Don't want to make you guys feel older than you are. But anyways, 150 years, I mean, you guys have been around a long time. You do some really the most interesting work between passports and the printing of the official congressional record. So let's just start with some basics about you as the CIO. How do you support the GPO's mission?
The information technology area at this agency is and has become a very central support function for all the operations within the agency. All of our printing processes today have a digital basis. So composition is done digitally, and there's a direct-to-plate process to move content down into the printing area. That is all now digital. So the IT infrastructure and the operations aspects of this agency really rely on the agency really relies on the IT infrastructure. So a part of the CIO's or the office of the CIO's function is really 24/7 information operational support. So we're really a production operation as well. But in addition to that, we are in the IT organization central to the activities of developing new functionality to help keep us well prepared for meeting the market needs as we move into the future, which has taken us to the projects such as our federal digital system, FDSIS, which is an online access to official and authentic federal publications in a trusted repository, as well as other activities associated with the continuing of making GPO positioned so that it can meet its mission going forward.
You're doing two things, really. I mean, if you think about the CIO's office and the CIO's job, you're worried about that 24/7 support of the functionality around printing, which I imagine is really a technical capabilities that you need to know. And then you're also dealing with the technical issues of, you know, cybersecurity, infrastructure. How do you balance those two kind of, in many ways, differing needs?
It's really addressed in a structure for the organization, and I think you've touched on a number of those aspects. I have a director of operations in IT that really manages the 24/7 activities, so that the job of that director is to make sure that our IT systems that support our critical functions in the agency stay up all the time. And that includes headquarters here, as well as our alternate computing capabilities that are off-site, where we mirror a lot of data, and we have an alternate passport facility down in Mississippi. So the IT operational functions all fall under that director of operations. Then there's another organization, which is IT security, which is the watchdog and continues to monitor all the IT security aspects to protect the agency from any sort of, you know, cyber attack, but also focuses on internal security screening of our systems to make sure that they remain safe. So it's essentially guarding the borders, if you will, to make sure nothing gets in. But in the event something gets in, you know, could have been carried in by an employee with a thumb drive, we have the continual screening of our systems to make sure that we monitor those. But that's under the director of IT security, or our chief information security officer that works for me. And then another end of the spectrum is the upstream and the technology management piece, where we have a program office that really focuses on what the agency needs are from a customer base, as well as what our agency customers and congressional customers need for systems to be able to support their needs on behalf of GPO. and the development staff to develop those systems, our enterprise architecture initiative, which is the blueprinting of technology to make sure that we're all kind of working off of the same song sheet as we progress into the future. So it's a structured organization that goes from the voice of customer and voice of agencies to figure out what we need to do into a group of how we can actually achieve those needs. This is the design group. And then eventually into the operations group that makes sure that once it's been designed and developed and deployed, it stays functioning, meeting the agency needs 24/7.
And you are the conductor of all of that.
That's what the CIO does, yeah. Yes.
You have your baton and you're, you know,
yes.
Making sure it's going. Actually, it was a great segue because about 18 months ago, I had the Government Printing Office Chief Technology Officer, Reynold Troikart, on the show. And I asked him to compare his role to yours. So let me ask you that same question about how do you as CIO work with Reynold as the CTO?
It's a very close relationship. But just as I went through the CIO's function of starting with the voice of customer, voice of agency needs, and eventually winding up in systems that are maintained 24/7, there's a similar type of comparison between the role and responsibility of the CTO and the CIO, where CIO has the things we just described. And the CTO really looks more upstream to technologies and emerging technologies that could start to become of interest or critical to GPO and in the information systems to look at possibly implementing in the future. So I see it as probably a 3 to 5 year look out in time to identify those technologies that could eventually roll into a system that we would develop. Plus, Reynold, as the CTO, has a very sharp focus and detailed focus on the security technologies and the emerging things, particularly in support of our secure products like the passport. So he's very much into that. And the CTO is also a strong advocate for our capabilities up on the Hill with the House and the Senate staff.
And I was going to ask you about that passport issue. I'm sure we'll get to it later a little bit. But, you know, looking out 3 to 5 years in terms of how to secure documents better, those changes must happen so quickly. And you know, what's today, you can't even think about what's going to be tomorrow in many ways. How does that kind of meet? How does he kind of give you that information for you to help implement?
A lot of it is, first of all, realizing there is a lot of change and kind of dealing with it. So it's like the first step is recognition that there's going to be a lot of change and you need to stay current with it. And we've done that here at GPO by establishing a CTO and a CIO. So the CTO can go out and monitor and make sure that there's a good awareness of what the changes are so that we can internally plan for the integration of those changes. But secondly, I think it's participation. The CTO, Reynold, participates in a lot of the external activities where there's broad communities of interest, discussions about the technologies.
And I want to shift back to your office a little bit. Real quick, just give us a little bit of an idea of how your office is made up, federal employees versus contractors, what's your IT budget. You sound like your infrastructure is pretty diverse.
Our infrastructure is pretty diverse. I'll start with that. But it's getting more controlled. We've come from an era of as recent as 7 or 8 years ago where there were multiple IT groups within the agency, and there's been a consolidation of a central IT group. And then through that time period, we've started to standardize on types of components and types of operating systems and types of equipment, et cetera, that we're going to deploy. So we really have a strategy that we developed a couple of years ago of how we're going to manage this complex infrastructure and get it into a position that it will be more manageable than trying to go across a very diverse array of equipment and systems to support. And that extends here at headquarters as well as our regional offices and regional facilities. So it's an overall plan, and you know that's a strong shout out to the enterprise architecture organization that is, you know, helping to manage what technologies are in place, which are in what we would call containment, which we're not going to really extend any further because eventually they're going to be replaced with something else. Contractors, I think we probably have about 30 or 40 contractors right now. The heaviest concentration of contractors at this agency is the developers around our federal digital system. But we have contractors that help do the configuration and integration of those tools to meet our needs as an agency. So the heaviest focus of contractors is really with that program. But then we have contractors on other programs.
And just real quick, your IT budget for 2010?
The IT budget for 2010 is just a little bit over $30 million.
Right, very nice. Very nice. Contractors who, vendors who listen to my show always are interested in what agencies' IT budgets are. So appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to you about some of your priorities. I think you gave us a little bit of a preview earlier in the conversation. You were listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Mike Wash, the Government Printing Office Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Mike Wash, the Government Printing Office Chief Information Officer. Now, Mike, before break, we talked a little bit about your role as CIO. We talked about how your office is set up. Let's move on to some of your priorities. You mentioned the key word there, FedSys, FDSys. Everybody, it's one of those projects we've been following your progress on, both here at Federal News Radio and very much in the IT community. Give us a status check of that and some of the other things you're working on.
And it's clearly one of the priorities. You're absolutely right. FDSys, is particularly in the next few months, is going to come out of what we've been calling a public beta. And we define the conditions for exiting public beta of this new infrastructure of the federal digital system. And the conditions are that all of the legacy data from GPO access, the system that's been in operation for 16 years or so, all of that content needed to move into this new repository known as FDSys. That's been completed. The next condition in order to make FDSys come out of beta would be for us to have a failover capability so that if anything ever happened at headquarters where the production site for that system is, it would fail over so that there would be what we call continuity of access of the official and authentic government publications. That system has been built. It's at an off-site location, and we're in the final testing activities right now to ensure that it's going to function as it needs to function. And then at that point, we can start to move out of the beta stage and make the federal digital system, FDSys, the system of record for official and authentic publications of government. Clearly one of our top priorities. Another high priority here at GPO and within the IT organization is to continue in our progress of replacing or retiring legacy systems. We have a number of legacy systems, and actually we touched on this a little bit before break, and my reference to enterprise architecture helping us manage our convergence down to a set of manageable technologies into the future. We have a number of old applications that have been around for decades, essentially, that were developed on mainframe tools, and still we have a mainframe that we run here. But those tools and applications just need to be managed, and some of them can stay on a mainframe application, but others can be replaced with an aggregation of new systems to provide functionality that had been in place and enhance functionality moving into the future. So our progress on what we call legacy system management is one of our key priorities. Just late last week, we awarded a contract for hosting our mainframe offsite. And, you know, we have an AMDAL mainframe here at the agency that's been here for over 30 years. And we've found a opportunity to actually host the functionality of that mainframe offsite, which provides us with production capabilities as well as continuity of operation capabilities as in a hosted site. And the award of that contract allows us to start really moving that functionality out of this building and off of a single mainframe into a hosted environment, which is a huge step forward for GPO and its continuity of operations and readiness. So that, too, is a very high priority. And then lastly, on the priority front, we have some other key system initiatives and projects that are also ongoing. And in May of this year, we awarded a contract to help with the design of what we call a composition system replacement application. And composition is the function of actually taking the copy or the content and composing it into a form so that it can be ready for publishing. And there we've been using, a 30-plus-year-old composition system that has been adapted and adopted over time to do various functions for congressional and other agency publishing or composition functions. We need to move that into future and into an XML type of composition capability. And it was another big step forward for us this year of awarding the contract for the design activities on that tool, which will start to roll into a development activity probably late this year, and early aspects of that system can start to be tested next year. But that's one of our high priorities as well.
All right, a lot on your plate. There's a lot I want to follow up with you. Let me start with the FedSys, because I think that's, again, one of your biggest priorities, one of the things that we've talked about several times. When you say you're going to move out of beta, so when you move out of beta, are we talking about maybe early 2011? And what are people going to see? Are they going to see a whole new web page with whole new features? Or is it really this a back-end thing that maybe people won't see for still another year, major changes on the front end?
No, actually, the move from beta to production is going to be almost transparent, and most people won't even realize it. Because what we've done over the last 18 months as we've been in this public beta is expose the system in its really final form, allowing the community to become aware of and comfortable with the tools and functionality of FDSys as a primary access tool for federal publications. And during that 18 months, we've continued to add content into that repository as we've migrated data out of GPO Access and into FDSys. So it was really, I mean, think of it as like it's a weird analogy, but think of it as we've been filling the bucket of the repository of FDSys with the content that we had in digital form and GPO Access, and adding the day forward digital content into the FDSys bucket. Once we're comfortable that everything is in there and we have a robust and reliable and backed up system with the failover, we'll be confident to say this system, which everybody's been using now for over a year, is our system of record, replacing GPO Access as the system of record.
Let me just jump in real quick. I go to the Federal Register every day, well, almost every day. I'm like one of the few people who probably read the Federal Register way too much. And I still go to the GPO Access website. Am I using FedSys at that point?
No, you're really not. If you go to www.fdsys.gov, there's a direct link for today's Federal Register on that site, and that'll bring you right into the Federal Register, and you'll be able to access the content on FDSys, which, you know, since we've been in a beta form, it's the same as what's on GPO Access, but the user interface and the interaction will probably be much easier for you using FDSys.
Will that GPO Access site eventually go away?
Yes, it will go away, and you know there's a sunset activity. It's kind of a gentle, kinder way of saying we're turning it off, but we're sunsetting GPO Access probably starting late September, early October,
Oh, no, you're going to break my heart.
No.
I love the GPO access site.
Well, it won't be an abrupt experience for you, trust me. There'll be ways of transitioning you to the new tool.
Will you walk me through it?
Yeah.
All right, Mike, we're going to take another break. I'm going to have to, when we take a break, have to cry in my coffee around the lack of GPO access. But when we come back, we're going to talk some more about your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Mike Wash, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Mike Wash, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. Now, Mike, before break, I composed myself. I'm okay to move on to the Federal Register, the 2.0 of it, and we're going to talk about that in a sec. But before we move on, one of the other parties is the contract awarded earlier in August around a mainframe hosting contract. You said you're going to do some offsite hosting. Who is that contract to? And when you say offsite, you're not picking up the computer and moving it, right?
No, we're not picking up the computer and moving it. This is a really common type of thing that very large companies have done to help with them in managing, again, their infrastructure and making for a robust environment. We're working with a company that hosts large information companies like Citibank. And essentially what this is you're working with a company that can emulate the environment that we have with our mainframe and then move our applications that are currently residing on our mainframe into their hosted environment where it's essentially a virtual GPO mainframe in their environment so that our day-to-day operations with mainframe applications will look and run identically as if the mainframe is sitting up in our data center. The additional advantage of having it hosted in this virtual GPO mainframe environment is that can be replicated so that there's a full continuity of operations capability with the applications on that mainframe, and that's one of the big benefits of this award. So it'll take us probably about 4 or 5 months to migrate our applications over to this, virtual hosted environment, go through the testing, make sure everything works, and then we can, move from a test environment into a production environment for the mainframe application.
I want to jump over to something else that we talked about, the Federal Register. We talked about the changes that FDSIS will kind of be happening. One of the other things you kind of mentioned was the idea of, applying Web 2.0 capabilities to some of your new products. Talk a little bit about how you're using those new kind of social media capabilities, how you're addressing those security concerns, and what's kind of GPO's policy internally for its employees who use social media.
Let's start with 2.0 type of capabilities first of all. 2.0 capabilities, I think generally speaking, are a lot of collaboration type of activities that, the end users can collaborate or comment or do things with content. And one of the best examples of that right now within GPO is the work that we've done with the Office of the Federal Register and Federal Register 2.0. And I would encourage everybody to go take a look at this new site. It's federalregister.gov. And what they will see when they visit that site is a modern electronic newspaper format of the Federal Register. So it's like visiting the New York Times or Wall Street Journal online, or you know, pick one of your favorite publications that are online and actively used. Federal Register, the 2.0, actually provides very easy readability of complex subject matter. It organizes the content of the Federal Register in a way that most anyone can go and visit that site and find out what's hot in rules and regulations and track it and see what's going on. But also within that site, there's opportunities to look at what the commenting period is. So, you know, typical in the rules process, there's the opportunity to be able to comment or inspect proposed rules and regulations. That type of capability and interactivity is being built into the new Federal Register site. You know, it's a really, really good example of how the government is moving into that 2.0 space just in functionality.
We are almost out of time, so let me jump forward to the last question about vendors. A lot of vendors listen to my show. They are very interested in both your IT budget, as we talked about earlier, but also how do you as the CIO prefer to interact with vendors?
Working with GPO, starting about 6 years ago when we were heavily into developing some of our new systems like FDSIS, we developed a process that is it's certainly great for us, but I think it's also really good for the vendor community. And the process is one of, first of all, expecting GPO to define what it is we need, which is, you know, not always an easy task, but just we provide kind of an overview and a concept of a tool or capability or a system that we're working on. And then typically, you know, we do some market research. So in this point, there's an opportunity for the vendor community to approach us. You know, email works very well. And then if there's an interest, we'll do market research to better understand the tool and capability. But ultimately, as it starts to really converge down, once we understand what we think we want, we post an RFI, a request for information. And the RFI really references the type of function or capability that we're really interested in getting more information on. And then typically following an RFI is what we call an industry day. And it's an event that we actually host here at the government printing office, and it's an opportunity for us in a public forum to describe what it is that we're investigating, what it is we're anticipating doing, a number of things. And then following that is the opportunity for the vendor community to provide capability statements. So they've read what we said we wanted in an RFI. They've heard what we want and have an interaction with question and answers. And then they can provide a capability statement, you know, maybe 10, 20 pages of this is how we believe our technology or our product can help solve the issue that you're addressing. And then from there, we can take those inputs and then many times refine our understanding of what we want, because a lot of times the community can tell us things that we just didn't understand or point out flaws in our thinking. And then eventually, if that initiative continues, it rolls into a request for proposal, and we're really into an acquisitions process at that time.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today was Mike Wash, the Government Printing Office's Chief Information Officer. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.